Hello, everybody, and welcome to Dine with the Divine. I'm your host, Ashley, and together we'll be exploring the magical, the mystical, and everything in between. On today's episode, we're going to talk all about mediums and a very famous Scottish medium that I had never heard of. So, yay. All right. Everybody, how you guys doing? I hope everyone's having a great week, and if not, I hope it gets better soon. So today we have a fantastic guest. Yay, somebody I know. This is great. Okay, we have Natalie Diane. Natalie Diane is an evidential medium and an intuitive who has made it her life's work and purpose to help connect families, friends, and loved ones to those in spirit. Her passion is bringing forth the true essence and uniqueness of those that have transitioned to the spirit world through love, humor, and humility. Natalie serves spirit through private readings, public mediumship demonstrations throughout the U.S. and the U.K., private events, corporate events, along with teaching diverse mediumship workshops throughout the U.S. She has studied extensively through the years at the Arthur Findlay College in Stansted, England, The Journey Within in Pompton Lakes, New Jersey, and continues her work with her mentor, Emin Downey. Natalie is currently working towards becoming an ordained spiritualist minister with a certified spiritualist tutor and certified medium. Yay! Hey, Natalie, how are you?
I'm fantastic. Thank you for having me.
Yes, I'm so glad you're here. So before we start anything, I'm just going to tell everybody how we know each other. So years ago, we both ended up at the same, I think it was a mediumship class, that particular class. Yes. We both used to go somewhere to learn about mediumship, and we ended up in the same class and realized that we lived like 10 minutes away from each other.
Yeah. But we would drive literally like an hour and a half to this mediumship class, and we ended up just living 10 minutes from each other.
Yes. So then we like started carpooling when we would go together. That was great. So we'd save some gas. Yeah. Oh gosh. Which was super fun to go. And then I feel like we became friends. It was like, oh, we were cool because we also felt the same way about people and things going on in the class. So it also became fun.
Yeah.
And so that's how we know each other. Now I want to ask you, when was the first time you realized you could talk to dead people?
You know, and this is going to sound so completely odd. At the time, I didn't even know what it was.
Mm.
Like, I think I was five, so maybe six, mm-hmm. when I had my first experience, if you will. I was outside at my grandmother's house. And all of a sudden, in front of me, there was like this prism, this misty prism. I can't even explain it. Like this prism that was just ebbing and flowing. And all of a sudden, my little five-year-old mind, I said, oh, that's my grandmother's neighbor, Edna.
Okay.
And then I just hauled ass inside because I was so afraid. But I would have all these different experiences, and I never contributed to, oh, that's mediumship.
Mm.
Oh, that's what that is. Oh, that's a coincidence. Oh, why am I feeling this? Or why do I know that? I never really put a label on it because I didn't have the knowing to do, if that mm-hmm. makes sense.
Yeah.
And over the years, it just ebbed and flowed and until I think I made a decision to work with it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
What has been the best thing for you about like your mediumship career?
Without a doubt, a couple things. But number one, being able to provide somebody comfort in their grief, or helping somebody see like a little bit of hope, or in terms of what comes after this.
Mm-hmm.
But I think for me, more importantly, I am so honored and excited to be able to help spirit as well. That's like really excited about being able to help sit with somebody Mm-hmm. And you know, take myself out of the equation just to be able to like hold space for them, to help them work through their grief,
mm-hmm.
or have them have a moment with mm-hmm. somebody that they're grieving for. To me, giving them a moment is what it's about. It truly is.
I know you must really like, especially for people who have loved ones who pass without, and the people who are left behind here on Earth, they feel sometimes they need closure. They have something that they didn't get to say, or mm-hmm. they had trouble with that particular person, or whatever the case may be. And I'm sure that like the comfort you give them by being able to contact somebody for them really like can change their whole lives.
Yeah. And for me, being able to even help facilitate a little bit of healing on their journey is mm-hmm. so profound to me, because I live for that, not for me, but to be able to have somebody connect with somebody in the spirit world who they missed, who they had a relationship with, who they want a moment with. And to me, that's really what it's about.
Not about me. Now, I know, okay, when you do your sessions, do you ever, okay, so probably I'm assuming that a lot of the time people come to you and they want to speak to, so like, okay, I want to speak to my great aunt Edna, who raised me, or I shouldn't use Edna because you just use that word, but that name, I'll use a different one. Sally, my great aunt Sally, she raised me. I love her. She's the best.
Uh-huh.
And you're like, okay, cool. And then you do your thing. But then you get their mom, Allison, and they hate their mom, Allison, because their mom, Allison, had a bad relationship with them, and they don't want to talk to her.
It's tricky because there's like twofold. It's mm-hmm. on one hand, it's like you get what you get and you don't complain, right?
Yeah.
But on the other hand, and I tell people they come for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
Like, don't dismiss them. They come for a reason. And as the session progresses, at the end, they have a light bulb moment, or they have that feeling of, oh, you know what? I needed that. Mm-hmm. I know why they came.
Yeah.
I needed to feel that. I needed to know that. I needed to have those words spoken. If that happened, like in the beginning, they don't get who they want. By the mm-hmm. end, they know why they came, why they got that. Now, that being said, a lot of times I will have more than one person come in.
Mm-hmm.
Just the thought or the frequency that they put out there. Mm-hmm. Spirit always knows who to show up. They know who to show up for. They know what they're doing.
Yeah, because I always think about that. I'm like, I know people must come and be like, I want to talk to him.
No, and that happens. And it's okay. But if they're emphatic about it, if it's trauma that they don't want to deal with,
mm-hmm.
or like a negative situation that they don't want to touch upon yet, of course I'm going to bring somebody else in. I'm never going to like force a family friend or loved one on somebody. I'm not going to do that. But you just have to feel it out.
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense.
No, it makes perfect sense. Okay. And of course, you don't have to give us all your like trade secrets, but like, so I'm just thinking of like, okay, like, and we're going to go more into this later in the podcast, but okay, like, I don't really watch, I never really watched like the Long Island Medium. I watched like maybe 5 minutes of that other guy, what's his name? Mm-hmm. Tyler Henry, I think.
Yes.
And he does like automatic writing.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Which is great. And yes. I think he's the one. Is it him or is it somebody else? I don't know. But he like draw. He'll just like, draw in a circle until he gets something, which is fine. Like, that's fine. So I obviously know. But like, how do you find is your way of presenting? Are you just like, you just see it in your mind's eye and then you speak?
Okay. So for me, like my work has changed so much over the years.
Mm-hmm.
But now I've found, and it keeps changing because the Earth's consciousness is changing. So we have to try to keep up with that. But what I do, believe it or not, I am normal throughout the day. I am changing the litter box, like doing some dishes. And then I have an appointment, say at 1 o'clock, 12:30, I'll sit down. I'll just get comfy. And this, I think for me, I find really makes a big difference in your work. I have to check in with myself.
Yeah.
Like, how's my mental aura doing? How's my physical aura doing? How's my spiritual aura doing? And like reboot those.
Yeah.
And to make sure that I'm settled.
Yeah.
And I'm not like going in with chaotic stuff. And then I'll just sit for a little bit.
Okay.
After I'm making sure that everything's properly aligned. There's more to it, but that's the Earth Note version. And I'll just put the intent out there, okay? Spirit knows.
Yeah.
Ashley's coming. And I'll just sit quietly and I'll just feel the energy just keep building and building. And I know people are like, I don't even know what the hell she's even talking about.
It's okay.
But for me, it's a feeling, right? The energy building. It's almost like palpable electricity. Okay. And then, you know, they come in and I explain how I work and they sit down and I take a minute. And then I just started, then I start telling them about their spirit person.
Hey.
Yeah.
Nice. Okay. Thank you for telling us a little bit about your practice. All right. We're going to stop here because we're going to go into more medium stuff. Because some people might be like, what are you talking about? I'm going to get there, everybody. Don't worry. Hang on. Stay with us. Okay. We're going to go to our dish of the week because that's just what we're going to do. So the thing we're going to talk about this week as our dish of the week, it's a little, follow me. Okay. This thing about mediums, right? If anybody's ever heard of a medium, again, we're going to get more into it in a minute. They became really popular in like the Western world, let's say, around like the Victorian era. So this is like 1830s to early 1900s. So I was like, what are we going to talk about for our dish of the week? I found some Victorian recipes that I was like, let's talk about it because Victorians ate weird food. So there's a link, as always, in the show notes, but I'm just going to talk about a few of them because I was like, what the hell is this? So the first one, it's called Kedgeree. Oh, gosh. Kedgeree. So it's a curried food, right? We all know that England, they colonized India for a while, so they got really, really into curry. So it became really popular after Queen Victoria was proclaimed Empress of India in 1876. It's a breakfast dish made with rice and smoked fish, flavored with curry, and garnished with hard-boiled eggs. And the thing about the Victorians is if you had money, you ate really well. And you ate a lot of protein. Maybe too much. Oh, my God. They also really loved crumpets, which is like a thick and spongy round of, it's like a biscuit, I think. Yeah. Okay. Because I don't really know what a crumpet is. I think it's a hilarious name for a food.
But it's just fancy, though. And fancy.
Okay. Now I know. And sometimes it's topped with lemon curd. Then you got a Lancaster hot pot. And a hot pot was born out of the need for warm, nourishing meals for people who worked in, like, textile mills. This one has scraps of mutton. They ate a lot of mutton, which is like lamb. Oysters, which at the time, oysters were cheap. And then onions and sliced potatoes in, like, a chicken or beef stock. Huh. Some historians suggest that local bakeries cooked hot pots for families to collect on their way home from work. Your husband on his way home from work or your wife would get their hot pot and bring it home to everybody else. Then we've got, roast goose with stuffing. That's too much. Ooh, goose. I've never eaten a goose, but I have eaten duck, which is actually completely delicious. But goose, I'm just like, ew, goose, because geese are mean. They're like the most aggressive birds on the planet. Them and wild turkeys. They're so aggressive and mean. I don't get it. Like, calm down. Then we have classic lard two crust pie pastry.
Wow, that's really extra.
I know. Warm lard was used to make savory pastry in Victorian times to make the dough more malleable and to shape it into ornate metal and ceramic baking moldings that had become the norm. So they would use game meat, probably like deer meat and stuff like that, and then jellied stock, which sounds not great. And then they would create elegant raised pies to impress the guests.
Oh.
Okay. All right. That's weird. Okay. So then we have these. Okay. This I would eat. Like, this is English. Okay. This is English style of raspberry summer pudding. So it's like, actually, no, I don't want to eat it because you have to arrange stale bread around the surface of a bowl, fill it with overripe berries and their juice, and then the pudding would be left overnight to allow the juice to soak through the bread, and then you would turn it over and it would look nice. I don't know if I want to eat that. I was like, oh, raspberries. I was like, actually, never mind. People really liked to host parties back then too, so they were always looking for like party foods. We've got Victoria sponge. Everybody knows a Victoria sponge if you watch a Great British Baking Show, so that's an easy one. Jam tarts, which sound good. They're like scraps of other pastries and jam. That's all it is. Minced meat, which was a way of using old meat and meat stock. And they would mix it with dried fruit, apples, and booze, which doesn't sound good.
I think my mouth just starts to water like that. Don't send me angry messages about that.
I was like, ew, that sounds gross. We got English trifle cake, which is very English. We've got Christmas cake, which is like a, whatchamacallit, it's like a fruit cake kind of. And yeah, those are most of the big ones here. Plum pudding, which isn't actually made of plums. It's just made of dried. They loved dried fruit, the Victorians. They loved weird meats and dried fruits.
Wait, there wasn't even plums in it?
No. It's made from just random dried fruit.
Okay,
whatever, Victorians. You guys are doing so much. So that's some Victorian foods. Check them out. Make some of them if you're so inclined, but I don't know. They don't sound very good. But that's just me. You might be, your mouth might actually be watering. You might be like, that sounds delicious. And if you do, that's good. God bless you. And Godspeed. Yeah. Okay, so I'm going to do my plug, and then we're going to move on. So if you enjoy this show, you can follow me anywhere on the socials. Not anywhere. I'm on Instagram, Threads, TikTok, and Facebook as Dine with a Divine. And if you really enjoy the show, I really appreciate it if you leave us a rating and a review and or a review, whichever one you want to do. And then you can do that on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. And if you want to throw me a couple dollars, feel free. There's a link in the show notes to tip me. And if you have any questions, suggestions, comments, feel free to email me at dinewiththedivinepod@gmail.com. Or you can message me on any of these apps and I'll get back to you. It might take me a couple days, but I promise I'll get back to you. Okay. Okay, it's tea time. Woo! All right. So because we're talking to Natalie Diem, a medium, a fantastic medium at that, we're going to talk about mediumship. So if you are listening to this podcast and you're like, I've never heard of a medium, let me explain. So Wikipedia, our favorite girl, tells us that mediumship is the practice of purposely mediating communication between familiar spirits or spirits of the dead and the living human beings. Practitioners are known as mediums or spirit mediums. Okay, so you, and we talked about just now, like two big ones that you've seen before. So if you see, think of celebrity mediums, right? You think of the Long Island medium. A lot of people think of her. Tyler Henry is one now, and I think he has a show still or something. I don't know.
I don't know.
I don't either. Okay, because you do this all the time, doesn't it, like, and like as any spiritual practitioner, I know a lot of people who listen to this podcast do different stuff. It feels so uncomfortable. Oh, there's also a guy, I don't know. Sorry, I didn't mean to. I'm going all over the place. There's also a guy who, like, does it. He's, like, a taxi driver. I'm sorry. God bless him.
No.
He, like, picks people up.
Yeah. And I understand that. I don't want, and there's a reason why I don't watch the television stuff. And I know it's TV.
Yeah, yeah.
But to me, it's it's sacred.
Yeah.
And that's all I'm going to say about that.
That's fine. Because I have something to say about it. Here's the thing. I'm not ever trashing anybody's gift and how they want to use it. That's up to them. That's between you and your God. That has nothing to do with me. Mm-hmm. But I do think it's very weird to, like, I'm going to sound funny when I say this, but, like, I feel like it's almost like a psychic assault when you just, like, walk up to somebody and you're like, can I give you a message from your dead mother? No, maybe they don't want that.
Literally, you could be undoing years of trauma.
Yeah.
You by just invading somebody's space. And you know what? Okay, now I'm going to say something. But you know what? When I hear that or when I, that's like ego to me.
Yeah.
Like you're, and I'm using this as, I'm just making this up. Your mom mm-hmm. is not coming through that strong where I need to run across TJ Maxx and tell you.
Not TJ Maxx.
Yes. Not TJ Maxx. But you know what I'm saying? Like, that's just ego.
Yes.
Oh, I need to tell her. Why?
Yes.
And to me, you can undo years of therapy. I think that's I don't think it's professional. I don't think it's ethical.
Yeah.
Bottom line, period. I don't think it's ethical.
No, I agree with you. I don't think anybody should do that to anybody. Because also, you're just doing things without people's consent.
Exactly. Like,
yeah. Even going up to somebody and just being like, can I give you a message from so-and-so? Okay, yeah, you could argue they're asking. Yeah, but you're now making this person, like you said, you're making this person now think about this person. You don't know what they've gone through with that person. You don't know their relationship. Yeah, and they didn't ask you for any of that. And you're totally, I totally agree with you, Natalie. I think it's all about the person doing it. So they can be like, look what I can do. And it's like, nobody asked you. Like, I'm not saying that these people don't have gifts if they're on TV. That's not what I'm saying. But I do think that it's like you said, your work is sacred. I feel the same. It's not a party trick.
That's the other thing. Like, we're not charlatans. And when you have these situations, one that makes authentic, legitimate people, it looks like it cheapens their ability. Because you have people running all over, like giving random messages or you know what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. It's just really authentic, legitimate people in this work, no matter what modality it is, do not randomly just accost people.
Thank you. Yeah, just say no to randomly accosting people.
Don't say no.
It's too much. Oh, God. Yes. Okay. That's like a thing, and it's weird. It makes me very uncomfortable, and that's part of the reason I don't even watch it, because I'm just like, I feel like I get like secondhand embarrassment.
Right?
Yeah. I'm like, stop.
It's not.
I know. I get like itchy, and I'm like, oh God. Okay. Yeah. So we're gonna talk about different types of mediumship because there's. Lots of different types. There are lots of different types. Obviously, we have mediumship in different forms and different cultures all around the world. So if I don't mention what you know, don't be offended. Obviously, I'm not an expert on anything. I always say that on this podcast. I'm not an expert. I look stuff up and I talk to guests about them who usually know more than me. And it's totally fine. We're all having a good time here and we're all learning together. One of the first types of mediumship that you may think of as mediumship, that people think of like psychic. When people think of a psychic, they think of somebody maybe who just tells them something. So that's like clairvoyance, right? That's being able to see something. And this is people who have mental mediumship, is what we'll call it. They communicate with the spirits through telepathy. So they may hear something. So that's clairaudience. They may be able to see, that's clairvoyance, or they may be able to feel, clairsentience, messages from spirits, and with help of maybe a spirit guide or just their own spirits, the medium then passes the information onto the sitter. So the sitter is we'll call the person a sitter. The sitter is the person who the medium is serving at that time. They're the person that the medium's speaking to about whatever they want to tell them or whatever spirit is ringing through them. That's the first thing. So that's mental. That's what you may think when you see somebody doing something and they're just talking, right? So that's one. So then you have transship. So this is, some people can say this is a form of mental mediumship because it's still like spirit kind of telling you something or working through you. It's just slightly different. So a lot of trance mediums will stay conscious. It's not like they're sleeping or anything, but through them comes the voice, or not the voice always, but like comes the messages from spirit. So they could be in a certain state. And not to get too woo-woo, but we have to go there. We're talking about mediumship. So like, you know, so I don't know the difference we'll get between this and I'll explain it down here, but some people also call this channeling. I know some people look at channeling different. Mm-hmm. Like I understand it as channel, like when I channel something or deity or whatever, you have to basically, and it's very difficult, and maybe you would agree, Natalie. Yeah. It's something that takes time.
Yeah, because you're actually working at a completely different megahertz level. If you're working intuitively / psychically, it's a different megahertz than mm-hmm. you are mediumistically.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to be able to get for your left brain pretty much out of the way in order to go into a trance state. And don't quote me on this. I forget all the different megahertz numbers right now, but I think mm-hmm. when you're working mediumistically, mm-hmm. I think you're working in the gamma state.
Mm.
But trans, you're right, is a completely different, megahertz level.
Yes, you have to. And this, and I've seen lots of different religions and cultures where they do, like there was one, and I can never remember where in the world it was, but it was in a South Asian country. I just cannot remember. It was either Thailand or Cambodia, I'm not sure. But they were having like a festival and people were in trance states.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And to the point where they could, like there was a man who had like needles and he was like pushing needles through his skin. He wasn't bleeding and he wasn't in pain, but because he was in a trance state.
Mm-hmm.
Like, again, it can be defined a little different. Or they said in what I was watching, they're like, oh, he's channeling this deity. Therefore, he's not having any issues with pain because he's like on a different level. And I know for my work personally, when I have to do this, it took me a while to learn how to do it because mm-hmm. you literally, like you said, you have to literally take all your ego and move it. Like, I always see it as like a gas tank.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is how I do it. Like, I see it as a gas tank getting all the way down to 1%. Like, and that's you. The 1% is you. And it's just so that you can get yourself out of it. That's how I always think. Like,
mm-hmm.
This is my own personal belief. I don't think you should ever be completely gone because I don't think that's safe spiritually that you're like, oh, I just completely let go. I think, hold on. Maybe it's just because I'm a control freak. I need 1% of me still conscious, but you have to let go so much so that you can just let them come into you. And obviously you do rituals and you protect yourself before that. You don't just let this happen. And you train yourself to do this. Again, it's hard, but you have to get your ego so far out of the way because you, in every situation, we're all human. We want certain things to be true. And we want certain things to be happening. But in this case, you have to push that all out of your mind. Because, in order to truly channel or be in a trance state, you have to let that spirit talk just through you. Just being, mm-hmm. you are literally just a body at that point and they're talking.
And I think like a lot of times people have, and I don't want to, again, this is just my belief. I don't want to like infringe on anybody else's belief system. But for me, I look at it as you have to completely surrender to spirit. It's years to build that state for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Because I personally believe, it's like semantics. People are like, oh, channeling, trance, or talking mm-hmm. to you, blah, blah, blah. But at the end of the day, for me, it feels like just a complete surrender, but you allow spirit to overshadow you.
Yeah.
I think that's like the simplest way I can explain it. Like for myself, I think that's like what you were saying as well. It's like, well, you just allow them to overshadow you.
Yes.
And you just, you just sit back and you actually watch it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's weird, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like the first time I, well, not the first time, but there has been a time when I really just channeled and like let a whole deity come through me. And the first part of it, I would just start, I remember because it was wild. I just started screaming because I was, I'm ready, but I was scared. So I start yelling. That's like, and then, but then I was like trying it also, I'm screaming and I'm trying to tell myself like, let go, let go, let go. And when I was able to let go, it was like watching myself because I didn't know what the hell was going on. I was dancing and I was doing all this stuff and saying things like that I had no idea what was going on. So obviously I was in a safe space. I had done like rituals before and I was with people I was safe with. So it was okay. But that's why channeling is so important that you have years of practice of it because it really can, you don't have control at that point of yourself. Not like in the way of doing drugs or anything. It's very, very different. It's just you're letting, like you said, you're letting spirit overshadow you and you're letting them do what they need to do. And you just are there to be a dummy.
It's like just energy. We're just connected to consciousness at this point. Like we're so moved, like we're so removed from our analytical thinking mind that we're just like a string conduit or a part of consciousness and whatever happens, happens.
Absolutely. Absolutely. In the 1860s and 1870s, trans mediums were very, very popular in spiritualism. They generally attracted female adherents who a lot of them had strong interest in social justice. So they would channel a lot of powerful women. And a lot of the trans mediums would deliver passionate speeches on abolitionism, temperance, and women's suffrage. Some scholars have described Lenora Piper as one of the most famous trans mediums in the history of spiritualism. Okay. And kind of like Natalie just said, I think you just said that, or I was thinking it. A lot of the time when people are in trance or channeling, sometimes when you ask them later what they said, they won't remember. Because again, it's not really you.
Yeah, you're working a completely different frequency.
Yeah. So if you used to ask somebody 3 hours later after you guys are out of your session or whatever, oh, do you remember what I said? No. So when you get a session with a medium, if you want to remember, ask them if you are allowed to write things down or even record. Some people let you, some people won't, but it just depends on the person. Okay. So the next, which is something that one of Natalie's specialties is physical mediumship, which freaks me out. Not gonna lie. It makes me so nervous sometimes.
I can understand that. But you know what? Physical mediumship, I don't even know, is such a, like a hot topic or like a volatile word like in this community because some people think it's real. Some people think it's a sham. Some people mark themselves as, oh, I'm a physical medium. What does that actually mean? At the end of the day, it comes down to all the energy that's being built by spirit.
Yeah.
It's like, how would you explain this? Like a gray area, would you call it?
Yeah. It's like, it's just another way to connect. But people get very, have to debunk it. People are all about debunking it.
At the end of the day, I'm fascinated by the science behind it.
Yeah.
And with physical mediumship, there's science behind it. We don't have time to go into that now, but it's really has to do with the conditions. It has to do with the person. It has to do with spirit world. There's so many factors that come into play.
Yeah.
So that's why I always question when people say, oh, I'm a physical medium. I'm a physical medium. There's so many factors into it that's able to produce the phenomena.
Yes. Yes. So if you guys are like, what are you guys talking about? Once again, let me read to you what Wikipedia told us. Wikipedia says, physical mediumship is defined as the manipulation of energies and energy systems by spirit. This type of mediumship is claimed to involve perceptible manifestations such as loud raps or noises, like knocking, moving objects, materialized spiritual bodies, or seeing parts like hands, feet. And then the medium is used as a source of power for such spiritual manifestations. In some accounts, this is achieved by using the energy or ectoplasm released by the medium. And the last physical medium to be tested by a committee from Scientific American was Mina Crondon in 1924. So there are people who do test this. Like you said, there is different science behind it. Go ahead.
No, I was just gonna say I've had sitters or clients that have just been like, yeah, frozen. Like,
yeah.
Well, I just really wanted a reading. I didn't really expect to see the person or hear their voice. I've had what is that called? Like when you can hear their voice like in the room.
I don't know what it is, but I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. All kinds of stuff happen here in the office and people, they get freaked out. And I'm like, but you came. You came to me. Like, you're here. But don't be scared. That's the thing. Like, we want to, things that happen like that or things that we don't understand, we just attach this fear label, which is normal. But I try so hard to have people say, no.
Don't look
at it as like a scary thing. Look at it as validation.
Yeah, yeah. I think, okay, so my personal, this is just me. I'm just like a scaredy cat. Even though I 100% believe, I 100% know that if it was you, I know I'm safe. I know all that stuff. I'm just like, what? Because I just know I'm very much more of, I see things in my mind's eye. I don't see things physically. So if I see it, I'm nervous because I'm not used to that. And I feel, and I've said this before, I feel this spirit knows me and they know that I can't handle that. So that's why they don't just pop out at me all the time.
But I get people or see people like that in solid form. And the times I've seen people in solid form like that, that's a whole other podcast. That's like, was a whole other story. But your point, like how you said how spirit works with you, I don't get names. Very rarely do I get names.
Yeah.
Because in real life, normal Natalie life, I'm not good with names. So why is spirit going to work with me with names when I can't remember your name?
Yeah.
I get what you're saying. You're dealing with intelligence.
Yeah.
They're not going to dumb themselves down. Mm. They work with us how we can serve them better, if that makes sense.
Yes, absolutely. And then, okay, can we talk about this for a minute? Can we talk about ectoplasm?
Okay. I'm going to be honest. I don't know. I know what you're talking about, but go ahead. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No. You're good. This podcast is all about us interrupting each other, and it's totally fine.
Okay. Is like off the rails.
Okay. Plasm. Okay. So I was watching, this is like a year or two ago, there was a Netflix special. I think it was called Surviving Death, I think.
Okay.
And it was about the first two episodes, I think, were about like near death experiences. And then the last two or three episodes were about like following this one woman. I think she was Dutch, I believe, this Dutch medium. And she said that she produced ectoplasm.
Okay.
So I don't know. I'm not an expert on ectoplasm. I will put a link in the show notes so you can read more for yourself. I don't know that much. All I know is I've heard it described as like spirit goo. Like it's a goo that's like produced by the medium. And then like forms whatever it forms and then like goes away. Like I'm not a genius about this, but this woman, I don't remember which country she's from. I think she was Dutch or Danish, something that started with a D, either has ethnicity or the country. She would talk about how like, so she would have to be like in a dark room with red light or whatever, and she would produce it. But then if somebody like turned on the light too quick, it would go back in her body, like, very violently, and it would hurt.
Really?
Yeah, that's what she said. So she had to, like, or people would try to, like, she'd always say, like, you can't take pictures. But, like, one time someone tried to take a picture and it just went back in her body and it hurt her. Like,
huh.
It burned her nostrils and stuff. I don't know. I've never seen it, but I've heard of it. And I know that some people who may be like, I'm a physical medium, they may produce it. But yeah, it's a thing.
It is. But yeah. Like, I guess my question is, and I'm just playing devil's advocate here. But like, I never really understood that. Like, why it has to be dark? Why it has to be a red light? Mm-hmm. Because if you're really, why can't it be in the daylight? If you're really truly working with what you say you're working, why can't you see it? Or why doesn't it happen in daylight? Why do I need like a special light? Why do I need like special conditions?
Yes.
In a sense?
Yes.
I'm not saying that hasn't happened. I believe it does, but that's just like a question. Like, I've always wondered why.
I think the same thing.
Reach out to us, please.
Yeah. Let us know. Email me at divewithadivine@gmail.com because we're confused. Okay, before we move on, remember, okay, I don't know if you still do this, Natalie, but remember when we had to do that black box thing?
Yeah.
Okay. Scare the shit out of me, the cabinet. But okay, everybody, and I will edit this out if you're not okay with me saying this.
Yes, yeah.
Okay, we, like I said, when we met each other and we ended up becoming friends, we were going to mediumship classes and we had to do this trans mediumship class where we had to sit in this black box and they shine this like light on you. I forget what color the light was, red or green or something.
Red.
Red light. Let me tell you, everybody, this is what happened. So we were in the class. And Natalie's in the spirit box. Natalie is a very beautiful white woman, okay? Now, she was in the spirit box. I'm sitting there. I'm already nervous. Like, nothing bad has happened. Nothing scary has happened. But I'm nervous. I'm anxious. And all of a sudden, Natalie turned into an old Asian man. I swear. I was like... Her whole face changed. And I was like, my God.
I think that's partly tenfold overshadowment. Like you bring in spirits so close that they're able to work with you that way. Mm-hmm. And you take on their appearances. Well, yeah. I agree with that.
Where did this old ancient man come from?
And then people went back. It was like too much. I can't stay up for trance anymore. I'm done.
I know. After that, I never did that again. I was like, I can't handle it. Oh, no. Oh, God, that was funny. Okay. Our next kind of mediumship is direct voice. I think that's what you were talking about before.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So this is when the medium is doing their mediumship thing, but then you hear the actual voice of the person that the medium is channeling coming from like somewhere else. Sometimes these mediums are known as trumpet mediums because they used to use these like trumpet things to channel the voice.
Yeah.
There's a medium named Leslie Flint. Yeah. Who is one of the best known people who is a form of this kind of mediumship. Then you have channeling. Now, channeling, like we talked about channeling a lot before, but then this, there's like different definitions of it. In this one, this is using a specific object, person, or location, or process. So this is engaging in a seance or entering trance, or some people use psychedelic medicines to do it. So it could be shrooms or peyote or ayahuasca or whatever, and that helps them connect. And that to me is a little different, but you define it however you like to define it. They're like, and so in this, they give an example which I think is interesting. In Shintoism, the public shrine is a building or a place that functions as a conduit for kami. So kami are like spiritual beings in Japanese culture, and they can, and if you go to these places, people can then can channel these kami. Now, let's see, what else is it? Oh, that's our last one. But one of the most notable, a notable channeler, actually, which I didn't know this, in the early 1900s was Rose Edith Kelly, who was the wife of somebody you've probably heard of, ceremonial magician Aleister Crowley. She allegedly channeled the voice of a non-physical entity named Iowas during their honeymoon in Cairo, Egypt in 1904. She also channeled ascended masters and different types of deities. And there was a guy, another channeler named J.Z. Knight, who claimed to channel the spirit of Ramtha, a 30,000-year-old man from Lemuria. Some other notable channelers were Jane Roberts, who channeled Seth, and Esther Hicks, who channeled Abraham. Okay. Interesting. All right. So those are some different types of mediums. And cool. Now this brings us to our story time. So for today's story time, we're going to talk about, I had my heart set on talking about the Fox sisters. But then there was like so much controversy. I was getting tired of reading about it. I was like, we're not talking about the Fox sisters.
Shenanigans. I can't even.
So many shenanigans. So I was like, I can't live. So I was like, just Googling other famous mediums. Uh-huh. And I found this guy I'd never heard of. His name is Daniel Dunglass Holm. So we're going to talk about Daniel. So Daniel, again, he was living during the Victorian times. By the way, everybody, like I said at the beginning, Victorians, they love this shit. This is where it really got popular.
Yeah. This is every Friday night. Like, with Ashley's, we're going to Natalie's. Yeah. That's the jam. Yeah.
Yes, they love this shit. They couldn't have enough of it. It's crazy. They're eating all their weird foods and they were having seances constantly. Like, even Spirit was like, can you guys give me a brick?
I don't need to work every week.
Calm down. Oh my God.
I know.
Spirit comes into the stands. They're like, ew, you guys are eating this weird raspberry and pudding cake again? You guys can't eat anything else?
I'm like, oh.
What kind of cow? I can't have this for dinner again. Miss me? That stuff is nasty. Oh, that's funny. Okay, so we got Daniel Dunglass Holm. So Daniel was the third child of Elizabeth Holm, who was born March 20th, 1833. His mom was a famous seer, and so were like a whole bunch of her ancestors. He's from Scotland, and at this time in Scotland, having the gift of what they called second sight was actually seen as a curse. So people thought it's not a good thing to be able to know shit, but he knew a lot of shit. His dad, William Holm, was the illegitimate son of Alexander, the 10th Earl of Holm. That's why he had the name Holm. His dad was described as a bitter, morose, and unhappy man who drank and often was very aggressive towards his wife. Oh, sorry, Elizabeth. And so Elizabeth had 8 kids while she was living in this mill house that they lived in, making paper, I guess. She had 6 sons and 2 daughters. And because she had so many damn kids, she sent our friend Daniel to go live with her eldest sister who had no kids. So then, also, Daniel, side note, he had a couple of his siblings died early. One of his siblings, Mary, died when she was 12. One of his siblings, Adam, died at the age of 17 when he was en route to Greenland, which Holmes said he actually predicted that 5 months before it happened. So anyway, he was raised by his aunt and her husband. So sometime between 1838 and 1841, the aunt and the husband were like, we're going to move to the U.S. So they did. They moved to a place called Greenville, which was near Norwich, Connecticut. So he started going to school. He was known as Scotty because I guess he was Scottish. That's why. And he became really, really good friends with this boy named Edwin. So him and Edwin would go into the woods all the time and read the Bible, apparently, and tell each other stories. And they made, which is like really cute. But then also I was like, maybe they were just gay. It's fine either way. Either way, it's adorable. It's cute. Like the Bible part, like, okay, maybe they didn't have any other books. That's the only book they had. Yeah, but they were like reading the Bible in the woods. Like, okay, this is weird. But okay, no problem. As soon as I read that, I was like, oh, they were just gay. And they were adorable. And they were like in love. And I was so happy for them. But it's so cute. Who knows? It's fine. I love them. And then here's another thing, guys. This is how you know it was love, okay? I don't know these people, but this is how you know. Because they made a pact stating that if one or the other were to die, they would try to make contact with each other. They were in love.
There you go.
Yeah, they were in love. And I think it's beautiful. And that's so cute. First love. Anyway, so Holm and his aunt, they moved to this place called Troy, New York, soon after they had been in Greenville. So now Holm is so upset because he has to move away from Edwin, his first love slash best friend. So this is about 155 miles from Greenville. Now, of course, they don't have Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Snapchat. They can't do that. They had to write each other letters probably. It's far, okay? It's 300 miles away. Okay, Holm says it's 300 miles away, but it's actually 155 miles. It doesn't matter. It was fucking far. So, Holm, he lost contact with Edwin, as friends do. And then one night, he woke up in the middle of the night, and he saw a brightly lit vision of Edwin sitting at the foot of his bed. And all of a sudden, Holm was like, oh, shit, I think Edwin's dead. Like, he just thought that. Yeah, and then actually a couple days later, he got a letter from Edwin's family saying that Edwin had died of dysentery 3 days before Holm's vision.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So he did. He did contact him then.
I know. He kept his promise. Oh my God. That's so sweet. I know. Bless his heart. That was so adorable. So a few years later, Holm and his aunt, they moved back to Greenville, and his mom, Elizabeth, emigrated from Scotland to America with the couple surviving members of the family, and they all lived in Waterford, Connecticut, which was 12 miles from where Holm was living. So Holm then reunited with his mom, but not for long, because she actually, remember, his mom was also a seer. His mom foretold her own death in 1850, and she said that she saw a vision that said 12 o'clock, which was the time of her death, which is interesting. Elizabeth was his mom, by the way. Elizabeth, her death made Holm want to return to be, like, to religion. So his aunt was a Presbyterian, and they held, like, a Calvinist view of the world. So that meant that everything was, like, based on fate. Things had already been decided for you. But Holm embraced the Wesleyan faith, which believed that every soul could be saved. And his aunt really hated that. So she made him change to be a Congregationalist, which wasn't, she didn't really like, but it was better for her. It was more like her religion. Okay, no problem. Here's when some problems started. Now, Holmes is all religious now, and so is his aunt. Everybody loves Jesus. It's no problem. But all of a sudden, his house started getting rapping, so knocking and scratching and all that shit. And everybody was like, oh, shit, what's that? So they called the minister, and they called all sorts of ministers. They called a Baptist, a Congregationalist, and they called a Wesleyan minister. And they said that Holmes was actually possessed by the devil. But Holm was like, I don't think I'm possessed by the devil. I think that I have a gift from the Lord. And they were like, no, girl, you don't. But they're like, girl, no. Yeah. So according to Holm, the knocking wouldn't stop. And then all of a sudden, tables and shit started to move when he was around. And Holm would put heavy shit on the table, and it would still move. And he's like, oh, no, this is crazy. So then people started to think that the house was weird. So his aunt's like, sorry, bro, you got to move. And he's like, oh, my God, I got to leave. So the first place he went was a place called Willimantic, Connecticut. And later he lived in Lebanon, Connecticut with his friend. So March 1851 to be, he held his first seance. And people went, a newspaper reporter went. And he said that he was there, and the table was moving without anybody touching it, even when Hayden, that was the journalist's name, tried to stop the table from moving. It was still moving, and he couldn't see anybody touching it. So he was like, oh, shit, this shit is real. Holm became really well-known all through New England, and he started traveling around and helping sick people and also communicating with the dead all the time. But he was like, all of a sudden he got real famous, and he was a little shy. So he was a little nervous about that. But he never directly asked people for money. But he did live well, because he would get lots of gifts and donations. People would let him stay with them. So, like, it was good for him. Sorry, everybody, about my dry throat. Woo! I hydrate myself before I record these podcasts. Okay.
Channel.
Huh?
You're trying to channel.
I'm trying to channel.
Fucker's blocked.
Not my throat chakra. Okay. Oh, yeah. So he would get lodging and different stuff from people in lieu of money sometimes. He told everybody that he didn't want this to be a thing where people thought he was just doing it for money. He genuinely wanted to help people. And he treated everybody like as an equal rather than people worked for him or like different. He was like, no, we're all the same. Holm seemed like a pretty decent dude. Yeah, I like him. In 1852, Holm was the guest of this guy named Rufus Elmer in Springfield, Massachusetts, and he was giving seances 6 or 7 times a day. Victorian people had time.
Wait, what? Like, nobody works. Like, what is going on?
What were you guys doing? Like, 6 or 7 times a day, you all got and sat around a table to make this man channel spirit for you? Like, stop. Like, you're doing too much. Oh, my gosh. So, crowds of people used to come to these seances. Well, there were 6 or 7 times a day you could get in at some point. Harvard professor David Wells, he came. And the poet and editor of the New York Evening Post, and his name was William Cullen Bryant. They used to come all the time to see what was going on. They were convinced that it was a hoax, right? They were like, this can't be real. This can't be real. But they went and they left believers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They were like, oh, shit, this is just crazy. They're like, even one time they had, this is funny. They got 5, and this says here, 5 men of heavy build. So 5 big dudes who all weighed a total of like 850 pounds to sit on the table. Damn, that must have been a sturdy table.
Well, what happened to the table? Did it still move?
It still moved.
Okay.
You know what kind of table that was? An Amish table. Because if the Amish can do something, it's build a chair and a table. Amish furniture is serious. That's why it's so expensive, because he's like the best made furniture ever. Amish people they know how to build. They know how to build some stuff. Anyway, so I always want an Amish table, but then I see it as $2,000. I'm like, oh yeah, I can't afford that. Anyway, okay, so yes, the table moved after the 5 men of heavy build were sitting on it, and there was like light all over the walls. Nobody could figure out how he was doing this, and a lot of people would be like, this is a fraud. This is a fraud. But people couldn't really figure out how it was fraud. Mm-hmm. They would just have a lot of theories, but nobody, like, figured it out. Anyway, so then, Holm claimed that in August 1852 in South Manchester, Connecticut, at the house of some dude named Ward Cheney, who was a successful silk merchant, he was reportedly seen to levitate twice and then rise up to the ceiling with loud rappings and knocking more than ever before, more aggressive. The table was like going all over the place, and it sounded like a ship was at sea, and I guess they weren't anywhere near the ocean. And everyone's like, oh my God.
Yes. No wonder there's crowds outside of the house. All the
I know. But then some people said that the room was badly lit, so they're like, we don't know if it really happened. I don't know. Okay, that's fine. I don't know. It just sounds like a lot. Anyway, so then in New York, people in New York heard about this and they were like, ooh, we want to see this guy. So he then ended up moving to New York. He ended up moving to Bryant Park, which is on 42nd Street. And his most verbal critic in New York was this guy named William Makepeace Thackeray, who was the author of Vanity Fair. So Thackeray didn't like Holm at all. He called him a dire humbug. Ooh, I love a Victorian insult.
Yeah.
Yeah, he said he's a dire humbug and a foolish superstition. Whoa. Shots fired. Although Thackeray had been impressed, though, when he saw the table turning, because he couldn't figure out what the hell he did. So Holm thought that Thackeray was, quote, the most spectacled inquirer, Like, all he kept doing was asking him questions, but he kept coming back. So he's like, bro, if you think that I'm faking it, why do you keep coming here? And Thackeray told everybody that he thought it was fake. And Holm was like, that's fine. And people would be like, oh, you're a fake, blah, blah, blah. And all these people would always come. And he was used to it, whatever. It didn't bother him, it doesn't seem. So Holm traveled between Hartford, Springfield, and Boston during the next few months. But then he settled in Newburgh by the Hudson River in the summer of 1853. So then he resided at the Theological Institute, but he didn't take part in the theological discussions there because he wanted to actually become a doctor. He wanted to use mediumship, but he also wanted the legitimacy of being a doctor to help him help more people.
Yeah.
There's this guy named Dr. Hull. Dr. Hull funded Holm studies and offered to pay Holm $5 a day for his seance, which then was probably like $100. Holm refused, as always. His idea was to fund his work with legitimate salary by practicing medicine, but he became really ill in 1854, and he stopped studying medicine because he became, unfortunately, diagnosed with the consumption. And the doctors, it sucks. So the doctors recommended he actually go to Europe to repeat. The last seance he had in America was in March 1855 in Hartford, Connecticut, before he got on a boat in Boston and sailed to England at the end of March. When he got to England, his name is Daniel Holm, but when he got there, they called him Daniel Dunglass Holm because they were referring to where he was actually from in Scotland, like his family name. Once he got to London, he found spiritualism, which was a whole thing there. Everybody loved this shit. So he's like, oh, wow, you guys love this shit just as much as they did in America. So this guy named William Cox, he loved spiritualism so much so that he owned a big hotel, and it took up 53, 54, and 55 German Street in London. So Cox loved Holmes' ability so much that he used to let him stay there and not pay. And then there was this other guy, Robert Owen, who was this old guy. He was 83. He was a social reformer. He also was staying in the Holm Hotel, and he introduced Holm into London society. So he met all, like, the popular people at the time. Everybody who would be on TMZ in London at the time, Holm met. Yeah. All the influencers, all the rich kids, he met them. Yeah. People described him as tall and thin with blue eyes and auburn hair, fastidiously dressed, but was seriously ill with consumption. Yeah, he was sick as shit, but he looked good. That's nice. Unfortunately, I know. Sorry for him. He was sick, though. Oh, and another thing, and you mentioned this before, Natalie, he liked to do shit in the daylight. He wasn't always about that nighttime shit. He's like, you guys think I'm so fake.
Exactly.
Yeah, he's like, no, I'm going to do this in full daylight because we're not playing games here.
Mm-hmm.
Some of his early guests were this scientist named Sir David Brewster, who remained unconvinced. So he didn't know how he did it, but he didn't believe he did it. That's all he knew. The novelist Sir Edward Hallward Lytton and Thomas Aldulf Trollope. And some other scientists, Michael Faraday and Thomas Huxley. They also came, and they were big critics, but they came to see him. The poet Robert Browning, who really, really loved to come see Holm, but also thought he was a liar. And then Browning even wrote a mean poem about it. Again, Victorian insults. It's called Sludge the Medium. I did not read the poem, but I should. I will try to post it on the blog.
What does that even mean?
I don't know, but like, I think he's just trying to be mean. Victorians were so politely nasty to each other. And then, so this guy, this poet's wife, interestingly enough, the poet wrote a whole poem about him, how he didn't like him, this and that, called him a cheat and an imposter. But his wife was completely convinced that Holm was real. And they used to get in argument. Like, this was like their marital strife was about whether this guy was
really or not. Dating life. That is dating life. Literally. That's like me trying to date.
Everyone trying to figure out what's going on.
No, I don't believe you. You were a charlatan. Oh, yes, I do believe you. Oh, no, I don't. Dating life. But I'm sorry.
No, it's fine. god, this is funny. So now his fame kept growing, right? And then people are like, oh yeah, he levitates. So he started levitating over here. So people started to say that they saw him. So there's this one guy. His name, William Crooks, which probably didn't help the story. But William Crooks said that he thought he saw Holm levitate 5 to 7 feet off the floor. But everybody else who was there that day said that they only saw Holm rise about 6 inches and then go back down. So who knows? But
6 inches, 7 feet. He's sick. Well, no, I'd be stressed either way.
Exactly. I'd be like, can you float? I didn't think so. So even if some critics criticizing how far off the ground people are floating when you can't float at all. So in the following years, Holm traveled all over Europe. He was always a guest of like wealthy patrons. In Paris, he was summoned to the Tuileries to perform a seance for Napoleon III. And he also performed for Queen Sophia of the Netherlands, who wrote, quote, I saw him 4 times. I felt a hand tipping my finger. I saw a heavy gold bell moving alone from one person to another. I saw my handkerchief move alone and return to me in a knot. He himself was pale, sickly, rather handsome young man, but without a look or anything which would either fascinate or fright you. It is wonderful. I am so glad to have seen it. Okay, Queen Sophia, she really enjoyed it. So then, in 1866, there was this lady named Jane Lytton. She was a wealthy widow. Okay. She wanted to get herself higher up in society. She wanted to meet the who's who. And she decided to adopt Holm as her son. And she gave him £60,000.
Isn't he an adult by now?
Yes. That's why I was like, this is weird. She was like, I'm going to adopt you and give you £60,000, which is, again, I don't know the conversion rate, but I'm going to guess is like probably like £1 million now, right? Which is like $1.8 million or something ridiculous. Like, so in an attempt to gain introduction into high society, so then she realized that this adoption, which was weird to begin with, he's like, how old is he now? Oh, he's like 33. He was born in 1833. So why did you adopt a 33-year-old man? I'll never know. But like, and he thought it was going to make you more popular. People were just like, that's weird.
I mean, what's the date of? Like, I don't understand. Like, come here, meet my 30. I don't know. Go ahead.
I know. Come meet my new 33-year-old son. Okay. That's really weird. But okay. So then she realized it didn't like change her social situation. She got really upset and she changed her mind and she bought a suit for Holm. And she's like, here, take this suit, but can you give me back my $60,000? And he's like, what?
So she's like pimping him out for like recognition. She's pimping
yes.
Social status.
Yes, basically, I guess she would probably taking him to parties and be like, meet my son, the medium. And everyone's like, your son? What's this?
You didn't want him this week. Well, like,
that's not correct. And he's 33. Did he run away like 15 years ago and you just found him? Like, what's going on?
So she's saying, listen, I didn't become popular with you as my son. Give me the money back.
Yes.
Okay.
And I was like, so
this is fantastic.
It was so weird. And then she said, which is so messed up, she went to court and she's like, he has to give me the money back because he tricked me spiritually. And they were like, what? But apparently under British law, the defendant bears the burden of proof in a case, and the proof was impossible since there was no physical evidence. Holm didn't have a case. And the case obviously was decided against Holm, and he had to return the money. And the press was like, Holm, this is crazy. But Holm, apparently, the whole time during this whole ordeal, all the high society people said he acted like a complete gentleman. And so he didn't lose a single friend. Everybody respected him during the whole situation. I think he ended up giving back all the money. So, like, people didn't look badly on him. They thought that lady was nuts. But yeah. They were like, yeah.
Wasn't like, oh, humbug. He was a legit gentleman. Bless him.
Exactly. He's like, okay, girl, like, I didn't ask you to adopt me, but you wanted this weird plan. Okay. So then also, Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, this is the guy who wrote Sherlock.
Yes.
Yes.
I have a story about him. Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, tell me.
Because you had asked earlier about seeing spear people or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a huge reader. My favorite is like murder mysteries. So one of the first novels that I read was Sherlock Holmes, right?
Mm.
But then when I was, I don't know, I'm saying little, but I don't even know exactly what age. I would always see the same guy, like the same guy, spear-wise.
Mm-hmm.
And so one day I saw a back of a book cover and it was Sir Arthur Conan Doyle.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, holy fuck, that's the man that I've been seeing ever since I was little.
Wow.
Like spirits. And I've been like, I literally burst into tears. It was like a visceral reaction. Like I didn't even have time to like process it. I just burst into tears. I'm like, oh my gosh, this is the man I've been seeing for years.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. Like,
wow.
Maybe I had to be there. Maybe it's not translating. But my point is that.
No, I get it. That's cool.
I was like, yeah, I have a huge affinity for him. I love him.
That's awesome. Oh my gosh. I love that. So me and Arthur Conan Doyle have the same birthday. That's the only thing I know. Yes. Every time back in the day, you always see things like, who was born on your birthday? And mine was always Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Did you know who it was at the time? Were you like...
Yeah, I knew he wrote Sherlock Holmes, but I never read Sherlock Holmes.
Mm-hmm.
The only Sherlock thing I've ever known is when Benedict Cumberbatch did that show where he was... it is a very good show. I watched that. Mm-hmm. But I never read the book. I should. Victorian literature, I don't get it. Like, I've tried a whole bunch of times to read, like, even, like, Charlotte Bronte and all them. People are like, oh, she's a genius. I read Wuthering Heights or attempted to like 4 times and I can't get past the first 3 chapters. I'm like, what is happening in this book?
That hands down is one of my favorite books ever. Yes. I'm like, oh, Heathcliff. Like, oh my
God. I'm so confused. I don't know who's talking half the time in the book.
I know what you're saying.
Okay. It's not just me, because every single time I'm like, who is the narrator? Nobody is explaining who is talking. I can't keep up with what's going on.
I know.
Okay. So, I know. I just have to read the Spark Notes.
Do we still use Spark Notes?
If you're young, tell me. Email me at dimewiththedivine@gmail.com. Sir Arthur Conan Doyle was a huge supporter of Holmes, and he was a big spiritualist. He believed all this. And he thought it was really interesting that Holmes could do what he said was had four different types of mediumship he could do. He could do direct voice, trance. Uh-huh. He could do just clairvoyant, just being able to see things that other people can't see, and physical mediumship, moving objects and levitating and all that stuff. Sir Arthur Conan Doyle was 100% into it and loved him. According to some guy, I don't know who this guy is, Eric Dingwall, I don't know who he is, I guess he wrote a book. A lady had acted as a medium sometimes and would help Holmes when he was doing mediumship. And then one interesting note about his personal life I thought was interesting. So he was married twice, but the first time he was married was in 1858. He married, wow, 1858. Hold on. How old was he? Hold on. I have to do some math, everybody. Oh, he wasn't that old. Sorry. I thought he was much older than he was. 9? Okay, I can't. Everybody's like, you can't do that math. No, I can't. Okay, he was 25. Sorry. Okay, when he was 25.
Okay.
He married a 17-year-old. That's why I was like, how old was he? Okay, that's not so bad. He married this 17-year-old woman who was a girl. She was 17. She was a daughter of a noble Russian family, and he married her in St. Petersburg. How did he get there? Oh, my God. He's all over the place. So then, I guess his best man was Alexandre Dumas, the guy who wrote The Three Musketeers.
Yes, Musketeers.
Yeah, and The Count of Monte Cristo.
The Count of Monte Cristo. That's my second favorite book. Everywhere I've traveled, I've taken that book with me. I've reread it.
Really?
And reread it because it's so damn clever.
It really is. The Count of Monte Cristo. Okay. God forbid anybody try to mess with me like that guy. That's the kind of petty I love. He went and ruined that man's life.
We took petty to a level that I've never seen. I'm running my dream. But he planned, he kind of planned out from it's just insane.
Everybody, if you need an old-timey, petty-ass book, you're like, how petty? You're like, people back then weren't petty. Yes, they were. Read The Count of Monte Cristo, because it is so petty. The guy tried to get this guy put in jail. He stole his girlfriend. Lots of drama. But the way this man came back and said, oh, you think this is over? Sir, you haven't met me.
An entirely new life, but yet he built this, wealth and fortune.
Yes.
He took it to I can't even explain.
Oh, it's the best petty revenge book in the world. I love it.
The old girlfriend, hey, remember me? Guess what?
Yeah.
I'm back.
And she's back, bitch.
She's like, oh my God.
I was mad at her because I was like, you are not a down bitch. You know what I mean?
I'm sorry. I didn't marry you. I can't. And he's like,
I was like, she's not loyal.
I know.
Why?
So good. Oh no. So then they had a son, but poor Alexandria, she fell ill with tuberculosis. That's probably where he got tuberculosis from, Alexandria. Sorry, girl. He married again later, and for the last time in October of 1871, to a woman named Julia de Golmaline, who was another wealthy Russian. He had a thing for Russian ladies. That's no problem. And they met also in St. Petersburg. Why was he in St. Petersburg all the time? He was in London. Okay, it's fine. And then another interesting thing. So remember how before we were talking about him and his friend Edwin and how we think it's his first love? So in 1869, this guy named Lord Adair, he revealed in his diaries under the title Experience in Spiritualism with D.D. Holm that he had slept in the same bed with Holm. First of all, you guys had sex. Why did you just put I guess it's 1869, you can't tell them. But he's like, yeah, we slept in the same bed. Why did you write that in your diary? You just were begging and you wanted to remember. That's fine.
Yeah.
It's not a problem. And then many, many of the diary entries contained erotic homosexual overtones between Adair and Holm. That's fine, because he was gay. Or bisexual. I don't know his thing. He was queer, at least. He had to be. I don't know. I don't know this guy. I don't want to say anything. But either way, we like him because he just seemed like a good dude.
Mm-hmm.
As Holm retired due to his ill health. Damn, he lived for a while with tuberculosis, which he had suffered his whole life because of the tuberculosis. And it was getting worse and worse. And then he said because of that, he wasn't able to do the seances and the readings anymore. He died on June 21st in 1886 at the age of 53 and was buried in the Russian cemetery of Saint-Germain en Laye, I can't speak French, in Paris. Okay, so that is the story of Daniel Dunglass Holm.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, he was an interesting guy. I'd never heard of him. When I hear old-timey mediums, I always just think of the Fox sisters, but they're the number one, but in my head, because I'm a lay person, but...
They brought spiritualism to the U.S.
Yeah, they were pretty popular. They had a lot of drama. I think there's several movies and books about them if you want to read about them. Oh my God, I was reading. It was like, this one stole this one's money. I was like, I don't have time for all this.
Dead
me.
Lol.
Yeah, I was like, we can't do this. So that brings us to the end of the show. This is always the worst part because I have to finish. I don't mind having so much fun chatting with our guests. What, Natalie?
Thanks.
So,
thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm glad. So, Natalie, where on the internet can people, or anywhere, where can people find you if they want to get in contact and see if you can do an ectoplasm thing and stuff comes out of your nose? Just kidding.
Not my fingers. There you go. NatalieDianeMedium.com on Instagram. I think I'm just Natalie Diane Medium. I'm not cool to have what do people use? Oh, TikTok. I'm not cool like that.
Don't. It's a trap. Don't do it.
Facebook. I'm Gen X Facebooker. Was that? No, wait. Am I Gen X? No.
Or I think you are.
Gen X, yeah.
Like, yeah, yeah.
We're 50. I'm Gen X. Yeah.
You're Gen X. Yeah.
Yeah. Facebook. I know Facebook's not cool when people don't use it, but I do. Yeah, Natalie Diane Medium. That's pretty much it. That's where you can find me.
Awesome. Yay. God. Natalie, thank you so much for being here.
And
letting me chat. Of course. No, this has been so much fun. So, everybody, that's the show for today. Thank you so much for joining me and my friend Natalie. And just know that this is Dying with the Divine. If you're like, what show am I listening to? I've been randomly listening to this woman and this other lady talk for an hour and a half. Now you know. It's Dying with the Divine. I'm on Instagram, TikTok, Threads. Again, TikTok is a trap. But, like, I am trapped. I'm there.
Okay, so wait, the other one, the Threads one, that's the one that's, like, the branch off of Instagram, right?
Yes, it's just, like, Twitter for Instagram.
Oh, yeah.
I never used
yeah,
it. Yeah, I know. I try to use it once in a while, but, like, I just say random shit. And I never used Twitter before. So then I saw Threads. I was like, I don't know. I'll just be on there. Whatever. I don't know what I'm doing. Sometimes I'll be on social media, and then you won't see me again for a month.
Yeah.
And then I'll post, like, 5 times in a day.
I feel that.
Yeah, it's like, whatever. It's fine. I love it. I sometimes just go on social media to be nosy because I want to see what everyone else is doing. Anyway. So if you really enjoy the show, I really always appreciate it if you give us a rating or a review. It helps more than anything does. Again, you can give me a tip if you really want to. The link is in the show notes. If you have any suggestions for episodes, questions, comments, constructive critiques, feel free to email me at dinewiththedivinepod@gmail.com. And if you want to follow me, Ashley, I'm at SankofaHS, that's SankofaHS, and Sankofa Healing Sanctuary on Facebook. And the other ones, I'm on Threads and Instagram and TikTok too. Thank you, everybody, for being here. Thank you again, Natalie. And I'll see you guys next week. Bye.
Bye.